Good morning again to each one. Welcome in the name of Jesus this morning. And very glad to have our visitors here. Each of you are very welcome. And we're glad that you're here with us this morning. Children, thank you again for singing for us this morning. And Nathan for leading that. I enjoyed that so much yesterday, and it was just an extra special blessing to get to have it again a little bit. And the thoughts that have been shared so far on Mothers and Mother's Day are a blessing to me, and I hope to you, mothers. I'm going to continue in that same theme, as you would probably expect. It's an honor and it's a privilege to be able to share on Mother's Day. And I'm guessing this is a message that a lot of you sons would enjoy to share. The responsibility of voicing our collective gratitude and love weighs heavily on me as I try to speak to what our mothers mean to us and what a godly mother is. Mother's Day is a day that we enjoy being able to focus specifically on mothers, mother figures maybe in our lives. But as with any celebration that focuses on one aspect of life, there are those who cannot share in that celebration because that one aspect is missing. And for those of you who are feeling keenly the absence of your mothers this morning, my heart bleeds with yours. The thoughts Jared shared this morning were especially poignant, knowing they're spoken from memories. Mother's Day is one of the retail world's happy times. It's a lot of money that gets spent on gifts, cards, and chocolates. And at least in our house, it's also kind of a sketchy time for food, since it's when breakfast is handled on, balanced on little hands with teetering breakfast trays and likelihood of food getting spilled in places where it shouldn't be. Excited little hands handing things to and fro. And lunch this afternoon might be interesting in many households as dads and children attempt to take the menu into their own hands. God cares much about mothers and about the role that they play in the lives of their children and also in the lives of the church. And we can clearly see that in the scriptures. There's a lot of examples, references, guidelines that are given. And it's interesting to me that God compares even himself and the way in which he cares for us, his children, to the way in which mothers care for their children or the mothering instinct. He says in Deuteronomy 32, verses 11 and the first part of verse 12, "As an eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, beareth them on her wings, so the Lord alone did lead." There's a mystique that accompanies motherhood. And it's one that has a lot of us asking the same question. How on earth do you do it? Well, the Bible has a lot to say about mothers and motherhood, and I'd like to look at just some of those thoughts this morning. And I'm going to divide my message into three parts. The first is an appreciation, a recognition of all that you do. The second is going to be maybe more of a practical look at some of the role of a mother and what motherhood entails. And the last is why they do it. What's the aim point for a godly mother? When we think of what mothers do, what they do for us, mothers are almost the entire world for a baby. And I'm not diminishing a bit the vital work that dads play, because we do. We get up at night sometimes too, and we change diapers sometimes too, and you know, there's things that we do, so let's remember that. But there's lots of things we don't do or we can't do that make that bond that a mother has with her child incredibly strong. The way in which a mother cares for her child creates an aura for that child of safety and security, in which they expect their mother to be always there for them, always taking care of them. And that's a feeling that grows right up with us. Young boys, young men, youth, how many of you have hurt yourself on the job, laughed it off to the crew around you? Oh, yeah, that's not, smash finger, that's all right. Go home to your mom. Mom, you won't believe what happened to me today. There's a dramatic change that happens because guess what? You know your mom's going to care, and she's going to say, oh, you poor thing. And that sympathy feels good. And that's what part of a mom being the world of a child grows right along with you. And that's a good thing. But don't take it for granted. Remember that she is taking time out of what she could be doing otherwise to bandage up your finger for you or wrap up your swollen ankle or whatever it is. Listen to the relationship problems that you're having and the mean things that your friend said to you and how how she helps you work through that. Mothers and fathers work long hours to make sure that their children have clean clothes for school programs, that shirts and dresses are ironed, new dresses are made, laid out, make sure that there's plenty of food for dinner, and then on the school picnic that everyone is well fed and has a good time. Mothers and fathers inconvenience themselves daily to make life easier for their children. Mothers deprive themselves of things that they would like, things like alone time, being able to read a book, having some quiet time with coffee, maybe spending some time with their friends, or having a long nap to take care of their children. Mothers pour love and care into their children, tending to all the little cuts and scrapes that make up a child's day. They stay awake nights. They make comfortable sick beds for children who need loving care, maybe more even than the medicine that gets doled out. Mothers read books and books and books, and they answer countless questions, sometimes multiple times answering the same question within the space of 2 minutes. Mothers help their growing children and their teens sort through the difficulties of personal relationships and just the difficulty that comes with growing up and interacting with the world and people around you and knowing how to do it, finding personal fulfillment. Mothers have many virtues, such as gentleness. And one reason I think that gentleness is so evident in a mother is that they have ample reason to be harsh and frustrated many times. And that's why we notice that they're gentle. It's because the circumstances often don't call for it. It's not natural. So we notice their gentleness. Mothers, godly mothers, pray for their children. The example that Dad had this morning was a good example. And someday, I hope to know what all I've been spared because of the prayers of my mother. I once asked some parents whose children, they had children who were in their upper teens, some that were getting married, and some younger children as well, and they just seemed to have an exceptional family. And I asked them, what is your secret? We had just had our first child. She was only a few months old, and And I said, what is the secret to raising a family like yours? And they both looked at each other and grinned, and they said at the same time, prayer. And I think that's exactly right. Keeping on praying. Romans 2, verse 7 says, to them who by patient continuance in well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. I'll tell you a quick story of a personal experience that I had in which I was glad for the prayer of prayers of my mother. I was traveling overseas in Southeast Asia and got food poisoning. And I was on a multi-day trip kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and I didn't have time or place to be sick, but I was violently, violently ill. Sicker than I ever remember being in my entire life. That's still the benchmark by which I examine all other illnesses that I've had. And one thing that I prayed over and over one long night as I writhed in agony was, oh, Lord, help Mom pray for me. And I found out later she did. I felt in a way that that was a rhetorical prayer of mine because I knew she was. I just didn't know she was right then, and I really wanted her to. I have a lot of trust, a lot of faith in the prayers of mothers. Another virtue that mothers have is faith in their children. And occasionally I think that's a little bit misguided. Someone asked me here the other day what my mother thinks of me. And I said, well, I can't go by that. Because mothers always think the best in their children. I saw the news here recently. Someone was running from the police. They had, I don't remember if it was a stolen car or what the situation was, but they ran from the police, committed a number of felonies in their driving, finally pulled up into a parking lot, leaped out, ran away from the police again, and then tried to resist when the police tried to arrest them. But guess where they were running to? They're running to their mom's house. And she came out just in time to see them get tackled, and guess what she was telling the police? Why are you doing this? They're a good boy. He's a good boy. And the police officer said, well, ma'am, he may be, but he just got done doing a whole bunch of things that weren't good, so we're going to have to take him to jail. Moms see the best in us, which is nice. But it's also something that we need to remember. We're not always as good as our moms might think we are, but that's something to aspire to. And we see that even in the Bible, in Matthew chapter 20. I always find this account very interesting, where came to Jesus the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshiping him and desiring a certain thing of him. And he said to her, what wilt thou? She saith unto him, grant that these my two sons may sit, the one at thy right hand and the other on thy left in thy kingdom. This mom had great faith in her sons. She knew they were worthy to sit right up there beside Jesus. And it's also, there's a well-known poem that I'm going to read that shows the ubiquity of this sentiment of the faith mothers have in their children. And this poem is called, If I Only Was the Fellow. While walking down a crowded city street the other day, I heard a little urchin to a comrade turn and say, Chimney, let me tell you, I'd be happy as a clam if I only was the fetter that my mother thinks I am. She thinks I'm a wonder, and she knows her little lad could never mix with nothing that was ugly, mean, or bad. Oh, a lot of times I sit and think how nice would be, oh yes, if a feller was the feller that his mother thinks he is. My friends, be yours a life of toil or undiluted joy. You can learn a wholesome lesson from that small, untutored boy. Don't aim to be an earthly saint with your eyes fixed on a star. just try to be the fellow that your mother thinks you are. A mom plays a vital role in developing expectations for the rest of life. A mom plays a vital role in building spiritual conviction, in teaching her children how to handle disappointment, and how to live with grace and gentleness, and how to live a life of willing sacrifice, an unselfish lifestyle. She plays a vital role in her children's work ethic. And these are not the sole duty of a mother by any means. As I said before, dads have a vital role to play. But mothers play, because of that unique bond they have with their children, a tremendous amount in the development of the character traits that come to define us. And God needs to get a hold of our lives and change us. That's the way to being a good person, not simply by following your mother. A mother can't get a hold of your heart and change it. Only God can change hearts. But a mother can make that path an easier one to find by her example and her teaching. On behalf of all the children here, and in recognition of all that you do, mothers, thank you. But there's mothers I know who also struggle with discouragement and overwhelm, maybe discontentment, or maybe a sense of failure. You're not a failure. And remember, motherhood is not a competition. God cares deeply about you and what you're facing. Remember that others are facing the same things. You don't need to carry the whole load. Oh, and I really hope we don't burn lunch this afternoon. We're doing this because we love you, not because we're good at it. I'd like to look at some of the practical role or the calling of a mother. And this is no way intended to be comprehensive. There have been enough books written on this subject to sink a ship, and I'm certainly not going to be able to come close to the intellectual capacity of or the scope of those authors. But there's a few things that I think are important that a mother can help provide for her children. And one is creating a haven, making her home a haven. Children need a place to feel safe. And peaceful parents are one of the key ways of making that happen. Peaceful parents create rest in a child, regardless of circumstances. Peacefulness doesn't necessarily come from what we do. It doesn't even come from educating ourselves on all the right methods to reach our children and understand their personalities. Peacefulness does not come from getting it right every time. Peacefulness comes, as I believe Mary, the mother of Jesus, found it, from accepting God's leading and making that relationship with God, and this is true for mothers, fathers, anyone, making that relationship the most important one in your life. Because if that relationship is the most important one, the other relationships will come in underneath that. Mary said, "Behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word." She submitted herself and found a place of rest. And a haven in your home is a place of rest. Now, the reality is that our busy lives often make our homes feel more like a riot than a rest. But there's still a restfulness that comes, even in a busy place, from knowing that you're in a place where you're accepted and you're loved. There's a lot of pressures in the world to conform, to perform, to be a successful person, to be seen as someone who is impervious to what life throws at them. The home doesn't need to be one of those. The home is a place where you can go and know that you're loved. And know that you're accepted. And I think it's important to help children learn the importance of being, of taking time to be still, to rest. We don't need to usually teach someone how to be busy. That happens simply by observation, generally. It may be a more difficult skill to master, to teach how to be able to take a step back and relax. Creating a haven means a place where all are welcome. This extends beyond immediate family. There are those around you that may need a mother figure. Maybe you don't have children in your home anymore, or at least not small children. But the Bible speaks clearly to the role that you have as well when he says, "The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed." The things that it says to be here and to do are the things that make up a beautiful home. And who does it say are supposed to teach them? It says older women. It's, according to this scripture, it's not the church leaders, but one of you older moms that should be having this talk. Not in this setting necessarily, but you have it in coffee breaks, in time spent together. In these few verses, there's a tremendous amount of truth that's used to make a home into a haven. And it's a crying shame when you see a generational gap that's not being bridged between younger and older ladies in a church. Because young mothers need the encouragement and the wisdom that your years provide. And they need the encouragement, maybe more than the admonishment, that older ladies have the experience to give. A mother has tremendous influence on her children in teaching. Jared read the verse this morning that says, "Forsake not the law of thy mother." That's talking about specific teaching that a mother gives to her children. And there's a lot that a child needs to be taught. Just normal things. Talking, walking, being kind, riding a bike, doing chores. But these are teaching moments that are part of a daily routine. And often they're not even noticed as teaching. They're simply things that we do. And I believe that scriptural teaching should follow a similar pattern. There are times when you focus specifically on teaching something, like riding a bike, for example. This is something we're gonna learn. We're gonna sit down, or not exactly sit down, but we're gonna pedal, and we're going to learn how to ride a bike. And that's a specific moment that you have. You probably remember the first time that you were ever able to ride a bike on your own. So there are times in scriptural teaching that it's appropriate to spend, we're going to memorize some verses. We're going to read a Bible story. We're going to have a spiritual discussion. But that should be only a part of it. It should be like the rest of the teaching that happens in a home, something that's just going on all the time to the point where it's not even recognized as teaching. If we engage in scriptural teaching as an aside from our daily lives, our children are going to grow up thinking that we are holy at times when required, and the rest of the time we are just people. We have our scriptural times and we have our regular times. And that's not the definition of a holy life according to the Bible. Why are we kind? Why are we sacrificial? Why are we gentle? Why don't we pull our sister's hair? Is it just because people are going to like us better if we act nice? I think teaching the truths of the Bible as a consistent part of even the regular flow of a hectic life is a way of making those truths stick, and also helping your children know where to go for answers when they're no longer small enough that you send them to stand in the corner for pulling their sister's hair. And with that influence, impressions are very important. Your influence will be seen in things that you never consciously taught. It will be in things like when you're backing the car out to go to school in the morning, do you look in the mirrors or do you look over your shoulder? When your child gets to the point where they start driving a vehicle, they're going to unconsciously do what they've always seen you doing. That's just an example of an impression that was actually teaching. Children don't remember being taught a lot of these traits, but they still learn them from you. And these traits aren't necessarily right or wrong. But there are other unconscious traits that we have that might be. How do we react when we're cut off in traffic? When we're threading the station wagon through heavy traffic, like Jared said. And maybe that's more of a dad question. Maybe moms don't have the same ire that rises in them when somebody cuts them off in traffic. I don't know. But that sort of a thing. How do you react when you're disappointed, when you're frustrated? What's your response when another food request hits your already crazy schedule? How do you respond when your husband has to work late or leave early or get another church responsibility? You can fill in the blanks, but the point that I'm making is that your influence is seen in the impressions that you leave on your children just through your daily interactions. They'll look to you, and they'll see how they should respond to strangers, how they should go grocery shopping, how they should clean the house, how they should welcome dad home from work, how they should resolve a conflict, because they've seen you do it, and they expect that that's the way it should be. Not because you tried to teach it to them, simply because that is the impression you gave them. I also want to encourage you, mothers, not to be afraid to be involved in the life of your teens, even though they resist it. And this I'm speaking from my own experience. I can't talk for you guys, obviously, because I'm not you. But I was not you, but I was a teenager. And I know what it felt like. And I know the resistance that I had when my mom would say, "Son, you really need to get a haircut before you go to the social. Or you really need to dress up a little bit more than that to go to track distribution." And just that feeling that would come over me. Are you serious? Why does it matter? But at the same time, I would have been very disappointed if she had not, because that meant that she cared for me. I would have continued to push the boundary until she finally said something, because I wanted to know that she cared for me. Now, at the time, I didn't know that I wanted to know that. Looking back, I know that's actually what I wanted. But at the time, all I knew is I would go until my mom said something. So moms, don't be afraid to speak into the lives of your teens. They need it. And deep down, they want it, even if they pretend otherwise. And I'm speaking for you guys at this. I know I am. But I'm speaking from my personal experience. I'm not just saying this because I think you need it. Teens are looking at you even more at this stage in life than they did when they were younger. When they were younger, you were pretty much infallible, just as a dad is. This goes for both moms and dads, but since I'm specifically talking to moms this morning, that's what I'm talking about. But it goes for both parents. There's an age at which anything a mom or dad says is simply taken as fact, that they are the infallible end of all truth. When a child starts being able to think, analyze for themselves, when they become a teen, they no longer take you at face value. They don't just take your words anymore. They're going to look a lot more at what you're doing, at this impression that you gave them. You can tell them that they need to get along with their friends. If there's a relationship disagreement in the youth group, you can tell them, you know, you should go back and apologize. But if what they've seen in your life is clamming up in bitterness when you face conflict, they're not going to, because they don't believe you. They're not going to go off what you say anymore unless they see that's also what you live. Your attitude tells your children what their attitude should be in similar situations. And I think it's important, all of us, that we learn to apologize to our children. It's not going to hurt them to know that we're also human. And of course, care for spiritual growth is vital. We all know the verse in 2 Timothy where it says, I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. And that's a real testimony. This faith being passed down and being attributed to the faith of the mother and grandmother. And that can feel like an overwhelming responsibility. And in the end, of course, it's the choice of each person to make that decision for Christ and live a life of faith and obedience to God. But again, a mother can make that path easier or more difficult, and fathers can as well, to follow. Children, I believe, should be taught at a young age to pray, even if it's just a memorized prayer. The practice of coming to God needs to become familiar. And as we think of spiritual teaching and growth, some people have the gift of making stories come alive, or of taking a difficult concept and making it clear, or of inspiring within you a desire to study a subject more deeply. But some of us don't have that gift. And if you feel you don't, that's okay. Children aren't going to be grading you on your ability to make a story come alive, as much as they are going to be looking at your personal life, at your interactions with God, and the importance that you place on that relationship. They'll base more off of your relationship with God than they will your ability to make something a little bit less boring for them. I read a story of a man who came under conviction at a revival meetings, and his prayer was, God of my mother, have mercy on me. That's a tremendous testimony of a mom who had a strong personal relationship with God, so that when someone needed a place to go, they knew where to look. Your children will know if God is real to you. Again, make that the most important relationship. You won't be neglecting your children if you do. The closer you draw to God, the closer you'll draw to your husband and children. So what's the aim point, the end goal, the result of this training and influence? Again, motherhood is not a competition. We're not trying to get our children to have a report card. You're not trying to make yourself look better than others. Your job is to point your children to God. You're not always going to be around to guide or instruct your children. And they need to know where to go for guidance and strength. Now, people will always need other people. And I'm not trying to minimize that at all. We need each other. But we need to teach our children where the source of strength for all people comes from. It's just like learning. If learning stops when someone leaves school, school was unsuccessful. And it's the same way with children. if their spiritual development stops when we're no longer with them, the training was unsuccessful. Give your children the tools they need to learn more on their own. So what does success look like? Society tells us that success is when you are known, when you are wealthy, and when you are envied. But status is a fleeting, fickle thing. Wealth ruins more homes than it helps. And envy should never be a principle that guides our lives, either to inspire it or to harbor it. I believe that success is what we've attained when we hear God say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And a mother who points her children in a direction that leads them through the narrow gate and gives them the tools they need to be warriors for the Lord, then supports them with prayer and encouragement, that's a successful mother. And that's not easy. It takes tremendous faith. It takes a mother of faith. But knowing what is important can guide you. I'm going to share one story before I close here. And that's one of the stories of Sabina Wurmbrand. I'm sure you're familiar with her. In one of her interrogations, she was being tortured and interrogated to reveal the names of other Christians. A lot of ones, these were Christians that she herself, you could say, had mothered in the faith. And she was offered a bribe to buy her cooperation. One of the things that the interrogator told her is, "You're just a young woman." She was 36 years old. He said, "You've got your whole life ahead of you. What would it take for you to cooperate with us? What could we give you? What if we tell you that your family will be taken care of? That your husband, who was also in prison and being tortured, would be freed? What if we could give you a nice home and even let you go to a church? Would this be sufficient payment for your cooperation?" You know what her response was? She said, "I'm already bought." And her interrogator said, "Bought? Who paid you first?" And she said, "The Son of God gave his life so that I could reach heaven. And I know you cannot pay me a higher price than that." And that's the kind of focus that a mother of faith has. And God blesses his mothers of faith. I pray God's blessing on each one of you, and happy Mother's Day. Let's kneel for prayer.